Hi guys, my name is Jack, and today we're going to take a look at another horrible case with you. The Lissy family tragedy. What drove a devoted family man to the brink? How can one identify a psychopath? Let's delve into what this term encompasses. Psychopathy is a personality disorder marked by distinctive traits, such as a lack of empathy and compassion, emotional shallowness, egocentrism, and a deceitful charm. While not an exhaustive list, these qualities are commonly observed in psychopaths. Such individuals are adept at adapting, skillfully manipulating those around them, and expertly concealing their true nature, often to the extent that even those closest to them may not recognize the potential danger. The Lissy family's story serves as a chilling reminder that someone perceived as a loving and close family member can suddenly morph into a remorseless perpetrator, sparing not even their own children. The man's behavior and his stated motives for committing such a heinous act were so alarming and shocking that they raised questions about his sanity. Yet, to everyone's astonishment, a psychiatric evaluation revealed that he was fully aware of his actions and had premeditated the horrific crime. This case shook Italy to its core, particularly the serene province of Modaviscanti, where this tragedy unfolded, marking it as the most notorious crime in the small Milanese suburb's history. Now let's methodically unravel this story and attempt to trace the sequence of events that led to such a tragic conclusion. The tragedy in Modaviscanti. In the early hours of Saturday, June 14, 2014, the quiet town of Modaviscanti was awakened by the desperate cries of a man. Peering out their windows, residents saw their neighbor, 31-year-old Carlo Lisi, calling for help. He appeared frightened and disoriented, mumbling incoherently and pleading for someone to call the police. As people from nearby homes gathered, Carlo revealed that his entire family had been victimized by intruders who had broken into their home, while he had miraculously survived because he was out with friends at a local sports bar, watching the soccer match between Italy and England. He mentioned that everything seemed normal when he left his house earlier that night, but upon returning, he found his home in disarray and the lifeless bodies of his 38-year-old wife, Christina, their 5-year-old daughter, and their 1.5-year-old son. Neighbors immediately called the police and emergency medical services. While waiting for them to arrive, the operator asked Carlo to check if any of his family members had a pulse and to possibly start CPR if there were any signs of life. To this, he screamed that he wouldn't step inside his house again or touch the bodies. While his behavior could be attributed to shock, it was peculiar that he referred to his family members as bodies, even before confirming their demise. Carlo's odd behavior didn't stop there. When police and medical personnel arrived and confirmed the deaths of his wife and children, he barely reacted. He attempted to cry, but only managed contorted facial expressions, with his eyes remaining dry and his face almost indifferent. He struggled to recall the sequence of his actions, gave conflicting statements, but claimed to have recorded the moment he discovered the bodies on his phone's camera. He believed the recording would prove his innocence, but it turned out to be one of the main pieces of evidence against him, among many others. This was the beginning of a high-profile case that was quickly solved. The robbery narrative, strongly advocated by Lissy, was dismissed within hours of the investigation, and he became the prime suspect. As the police uncovered more physical evidence at the scene of the crime and interacted further with Carlo, doubts about his mental health began to emerge. Who was Christina Lissy? Let's start this narrative by introducing its main characters. Christina Lissy, born Christina Omas, came into the world on September 17, 1975, in the small northern Italian town of Pavia, becoming the eldest child in her family. From a young age, she exhibited a strong-willed, independent, and highly ambitious nature, always marching to the beat of her own drum. She possessed leadership qualities and was constantly striving to excel in whatever she undertook, whether it was her schoolwork, performances in the drama club, or any day-to-day activities. Christina was someone who always had a wide circle of friends, thanks to her excellent organizational skills and the ability to lead. After finishing high school, She was accepted into a prestigious university in Milan and soon moved out of her parents' home to start an independent life. Despite this, she maintained a close relationship with her family, staying in constant touch, and her parents knew they could always rely on their eldest daughter. At the age of 19, while still attending university, Cristina took a job at a branch of a major Italian insurance company located in Motta Visconti. She quickly earned the respect of her superiors and colleagues, and her career was on a fast track to success. Upon graduation, she had a wide array of opportunities before her. But instead of moving to a big city, Omis chose to stay closer to home in the countryside. By this time, she had already received a promotion at work and assumed a managerial position, becoming a leading specialist in the field of civil insurance. However, even as she grew into an adult and a successful woman, Cristina never gave up her youthful passion for theater. She dedicated all her spare time to rehearsals and performing on stage, particularly enjoying musical productions due to her strong voice and impeccable musical ear. In Motta Visconti, she had her admirers and was sometimes even recognized on the streets. Yet Cristina's personal life didn't seem to fall into place as smoothly. She had many suitors and occasional romances, but most of the men she encountered seemed frivolous, unreliable, and unsuitable for a serious relationship or family life. She held on to the belief that she would eventually find her true love and achieve happiness. Carlo Lisi, the unassuming psychopath. Carlo Lisi entered the world in the fall of 1982 in the Italian commune of Caserano as the eldest of two sons in his family. The family patriarch held conservative views, was quite strict, and even harsh with his children. Carlo's younger brother quickly became the parents' darling, constantly pampered and protected, while they demanded unquestioning obedience, stellar academic performance, and high achievements from their firstborn. From childhood, Carlo strived to meet his parents' expectations, always acting as instructed. He excelled academically, participated in volleyball, a sport his father chose for him despite Carlo's passion for soccer, and never argued with his father, who often stated that his house operated solely on his rules. It was easy to upset or anger their father, who became terrifying when enraged, so Carlo made it a point never to contradict him, always enviously observing his father's and mother's more affectionate treatment towards his younger brother. As a teenager, Carlo became nervous and withdrawn, dreaming of doing something on his own, yet fearing his father's wrath. His fears, internal struggles, and self-doubt affected his relationships with peers. Carlo had almost no friends at school, where he was seen as an uninteresting nerd, often openly bullied without the ability to defend himself, as his father had crushed his self-esteem and suppressed any desire to assert himself. Over time, Carlo learned to adapt and blend in. He avoided conflicts, tried to merge with the crowd, and was superficially polite and kind, even to those he despised. It seemed Carlo had lost his own emotions, or perhaps never had them, laughing or mourning with others, but his emotional responses always remained shallow because he never truly felt those emotions. Another trait of Carlo was his skill in dodging uncomfortable questions. He wasn't a pathological liar, but knew how to prevaricate and evade with such an impassive demeanor that it seemed he was speaking the truth. People who knew Carlo personally later recalled his diminished capacity for empathy. He could be described as callous and indifferent to the troubles and sorrows of others, including those close to him. After finishing school, Lisi enrolled in a prestigious university's economics faculty, chosen by his father, despite Carlo's disinterest in economics or working with numbers. But his opinion was never sought, and he couldn't challenge his father's decision. Thus, Carlo was accustomed to acting against his own interests just to meet others' expectations. Carlo was quite handsome and knew how to use it to his advantage. His youthful sports activities and regular gym visits in adulthood made him even more attractive. Coupled with some charm and superficial charisma, Carlo could be described as a real looker with a dazzling smile and athletic build. People often admired his looks, leading to excessive self-love and clinical narcissism. Lisi easily initiated flings with women, but was incapable of engaging in serious, long-term relationships. First, he tried to avoid any responsibility. Second, he had no interest in making long-term plans, simply going with the flow. And third, his partner soon realized he was emotionally shallow and devoid of real attachment, leading them often to initiate the breakup. Even after university, the young man continued living with his parents, showing no desire to start an independent life, let alone a family of his own. Meanwhile, he secured a job at a leading IT company in Milan. Carlo earned a good salary and faced broad prospects, but remained dissatisfied with his career. However, his parents were overjoyed, and his father seemed proud of his eldest son for the first time, so Carlo was too afraid to disappoint him, preferring to avoid conflicts and criticism. But soon, a good job and career achievements weren't enough. His parents increasingly pressured him to marry and provide them with grandchildren. Aware of his numerous fleeting affairs and his inability to maintain serious relationships, these discussions often led to arguments at home. As Carlo always tried to avoid confrontations, he assured them he would soon find a wife and start a family. Carlo and Christina Lisi, a love story. Carlo first laid eyes on Christina during her performance in a musical play on stage, where he was utterly captivated by her powerful charisma and stunning vocal talent. Despite his immediate fascination, he lacked the courage to approach her after the show. However, fate intervened a few weeks later when mutual friends introduced them. At the time of their meeting, Carlo was only 23, while Christina had already turned 30. Despite the significant age difference, they quickly developed a romantic relationship. Christina, who had previously focused mainly on her career, found herself unexpectedly wanting to build a family and have children with Carlo. He was handsome, career-oriented, and intelligent. Christina perceived his hesitancy, dependency, noticeable selfishness, and some emotional coldness as traits that could be mended. She took the initiative in their relationship, with Carlo compliantly following her lead. Just a few months into the relationship, Omas introduced Carlo to her family. Christina's parents, however, were not pleased with her choice. They saw her suitor as frivolous, with Christina's mother describing him as a child in a man's body. She believed her daughter needed a more emotionally mature partner who could be a reliable support, not this immature young man. Christina, however, disagreed and decided to follow her heart, as she always had. Conversely, Carlo's parents were thrilled with his choice. Christina was seen as an adult, wise, self-sufficient, and accomplished woman who could take care of herself and their indecisive, somewhat irresponsible son. The head of the family, who was not easily pleased, was particularly delighted, convincing Carlo further that he had made the right decision. In quiet waters. About a year after meeting, the young couple moved in together and started actively planning their wedding. Carlo was quiet and compliant, always listening to his fiancée, never contradicting her, and carefully avoiding domestic disputes. Christina made all the decisions while her chosen partner silently supported them. This arrangement suited her perfectly. She was confident that a long and happy life awaited them. However, just before their wedding, Carlo revealed his true nature for the first time, nearly causing them to split. Before the wedding, Carlo's friends threw him a bachelor party in one of Milan's popular nightclubs. They drank, had fun, and were having a great time when a group of women joined them. One of them showed a keen interest in the groom-to-be, trying her best to seduce him. His inebriated friends immediately egged him on, suggesting that a fleeting affair with the stranger would be the perfect adventure to bid farewell to his bachelor life. Without much thought, the guy went off to a hotel with the woman where they spent a passionate night. The next morning, unexpectedly, Carlo confessed his love to the casual lover and promised to leave his fiancée for her. That same day, he confessed everything to Christina, stating he had fallen for someone else and no longer wanted the wedding. Christina handled the news with dignity, packed her belongings, and decided to move back to her parents' house temporarily while finding her own place. But when Carlo's father learned about his son's actions and that the engagement with Christina was broken off by his initiative, he was furious. He declared he didn't want to see his heir until he apologized to the bride-to-be and convinced her to marry him again. Once again, Carlo submitted to his father's will. After buying a huge bouquet of flowers, he headed to the Omas residence. Christina's parents opposed him. They had disliked this peculiar young man even before the news of his infidelity and the broken engagement, and now they certainly didn't want to see him. But the final decision was Christina's to make. After some thought, she decided to forgive her fiancé and give him another chance. The wedding and Mr. Lissy's double life. The wedding took place as planned, and the money gifted by relatives was invested in buying their own home in Mata Visconti. Initially, their marital life seemed quite blissful. Both held high-ranking positions with substantial salaries, affording them not just the necessities, but also travel, entertainment, and more. In 2009, they welcomed their first child, a daughter named Julia, and in 2013, Christina gave birth to a son, Gabriel. To the outside world, they appeared as a happy family, full of love and understanding. Carlo seemed to do everything to please his wife, not out of deep love or respect, but rather to avoid disputes. Christina was content with their life together, oblivious to the double life her husband led. At home, he was the exemplary family man, spending time with his wife and kids. Yet in Milan, where Carlo commuted daily for work, he transformed entirely. He frequently engaged in flings and casual encounters, meeting women in cafes, shopping centers, or even on the street. The handsome, stylishly dressed man in his expensive car almost always received reciprocated interest, but these affairs typically ended after a few dates. Carlo enjoyed the control and dominance in these short-term relationships, deciding when to see his next conquest and when to leave her. At home, Christina held the reins, with Carlo merely following her lead. However, rumors of his escapades eventually reached Christina. Each time she confronted him, Carlo swore it was all lies and slander. In 2013, shortly after the birth of their second child, Carlo seriously considered leaving his family for one of his mistresses, to the point of admitting his intentions to his wife. Christina countered with compelling arguments against their separation, particularly highlighting how it would upset his parents. Carlo had no choice but to concede to her reasoning. New love, and a horrific plan to escape marital ties. A year later, in early 2014, a new employee named Maria, young and attractive, joined Carlo's workplace. He fell for her instantly, unable to think of anyone else. He tried everything to catch her attention, giving small gifts, complimenting her, and asking her out repeatedly. However, Maria was clear about not wanting to engage with a married co-worker who had two children, but Carlo, persistent in his pursuit, seemed to ignore her protests and didn't think of giving up. Moreover, Carlo began to blame his family for his unhappiness, believing his wife and children were obstacles to his personal joy. He convinced himself he had never been happy in his marriage, or in life for that matter. But with Maria, he imagined he could have the perfect relationship. If only he wasn't bound by his marital ties and responsibilities as a father. The more he dwelled on this thought, the darker his contemplations became. Carlo broached the subject of divorce again, but his wife once more convinced him it was a bad idea, and he found no arguments to counter hers. Frustrated, he started looking online for divorce lawyers, but realized after a few consultations that he would have to surrender half of his assets to Christina and also pay child support. Unwilling to accept such an outcome, he began researching how to end a person's life quickly and without arousing suspicion. Delving into various criminal stories, Carlo stumbled upon an article about an armed robbery that had occurred a few years prior in Mata Visconti. The robbers had fatally stabbed the homeowner before fleeing with the loot, remaining undetected to this day. A monstrous plan took shape in Carlo's mind, to recreate a similar robbery scenario, but this time, the intended victims would be the mother and children. The last day of the Lissy family. The last day for Christina and the children was Friday, June 13th, 2014. Carlo had the day off and spent it with his family, giving them a farewell party, so to speak. They went to an amusement park together, then went to the mall for shopping, and spent the evening at a popular local cafe. The man did his best to make sure that as many people as possible saw him and his family that day, and everyone noticed how happy they were. After returning home, the couple put the children to bed in their rooms on the second floor and went downstairs to the living room where they made love. It was part of Carlo's cunning plan to avert suspicion. He knew that the examination would establish the fact that he and Christina had consensual intimacy, and who would think that after that a man would suddenly take the life of his wife and children? The woman knew that her husband was going to watch soccer with friends and assumed that he went to get dressed, and she herself settled down in the living room at the TV. But Carlo at that time went to the kitchen, where he took a large knife and stealthily crept up to his wife from behind. He stabbed her in the side of the neck, but Christina not only remained conscious, but also rushed to escape. Apparently, she did not immediately realize who had attacked her, and when she turned around and saw her distraught husband with a knife in his hand, she was shocked. The victim tried to defend herself and dislodge the knife, causing the man's hand to slip and injuring his palm. Despite her efforts, the strength disparity was too great. Carlo continued his assault until Christina showed no signs of life. She died without understanding why her loved one could commit such a horrific act. Then, Carlo went upstairs and cut the throats of his sleeping 5-year-old daughter and his 18-month-old son. Experts later concluded that the children likely did not suffer and probably didn't even wake up. Neighbors, some of whom heard loud screams, did not call the police, thinking the noise quickly subsided. Had they been more vigilant, the children's lives might have been saved. After completing the deed, Carlo clumsily staged a robbery, slightly moving and scattering items, erased his fingerprints from the weapon, cleaned the floor where he had stepped in fresh blood, and then went to a rarely used basement shower to wash off the blood. However, he inexplicably put back on the same underwear, which had small blood splatters unnoticed by him in the moment of the attack. Following this, the perpetrator bandaged his cut hand, dressed up, and casually went to a sports bar to watch football and drink beer with friends. He behaved naturally, and his friends, later testifying in court, could not fathom that he had just committed a triple homicide against his own family. Towards the end of the match, Carlo sent a couple of messages to his wife's phone, updating her on the score and professing his love, adding that he would be home soon. He returned around 3 a.m. and staged a dramatic discovery of the crime, making several critical mistakes. Firstly, he recorded the scene on his phone's camera, intending to create an alibi by pretending to discover the disorder and then the body of his wife, before running outside in panic. His second mistake was failing to turn off the camera, resulting in footage that completely contradicted his alibi and testimony. Investigation and evidence. Carlo's initial claim of a robbery was quickly dismissed in the early hours of the investigation, following the crime scene examination. Doors and windows were intact, indicating that the perpetrator had unrestricted access to the house. Nothing of value, nor anything at all, was missing despite money and Christina's jewelry box being in plain sight. The disorder appeared staged, with items merely toppled or displaced rather than searched through. Most importantly, there was no logical reason for robbers to harm the children sleeping upstairs in their beds. Thus, the case was swiftly reclassified as a deliberate act of ending lives. Carlo, becoming the prime suspect immediately, gave inconsistent statements and couldn't clearly explain the fresh cut on his palm. When he was taken into custody and his clothing was sent for analysis, experts quickly found tiny blood splatters on them. However, Carlo claimed the blood must have come from when he attempted to revive his family members, yet the stains were too small and located on the back of his clothing, suggesting they could only have originated from the knife's motion during the act. Regarding the video Carlo provided to the authorities, it clearly showed that he didn't approach his wife's body to check for a pulse or go upstairs to the children, but ran outside immediately and didn't return. Despite this, he claimed his family was no longer alive, and knew for certain all three were ended with a knife. The discovery of a bloodied cloth in the trash, which the culprit used to clean up, was the final piece of damning evidence. A psychopath, but is he sane? After the man was arrested, all his attempts to feign grief ceased. He became calm and unconcerned, and once in his cell, he simply went to sleep. Carlo felt no guilt or remorse, no pity for his own children or his wife, but he continued to insist on his own innocence, despite the fact that all the evidence was against him. A search history had been reconstructed on the killer's seized laptop, giving the investigation an insight into exactly when Lissy began planning to kill his family. There was now no doubt that it was a premeditated crime, but as yet the motive remained unclear. When the man realized that there was no point in denying, he began to confess, telling how exactly he got rid of his loved ones. But the answer to the main question shocked everyone. Explaining the motives for his action, he said that he could not just divorce Christine, because then they would have to share a lot of jointly acquired property, including the house, cars, and the family bank account, and he was not satisfied with this. In addition, there would be a burden in the form of two children who would have to pay child support. And all this, according to Carlo, would interfere with their happy life with Maria, for which, in fact, he decided to commit a crime. About all this, the murderer spoke quite calmly and indifferently. That he is a psychopath, no one has no doubt, but it was unclear whether this man is sane. The psychiatric examination established that Lissy was aware of his actions and fully realized what he was doing, but he did not feel any remorse either at the time of the crime or afterwards. In January 2015, Carlo was sentenced to life in prison. He listened to the judge's verdict indifferently, noting only that he thought so. Sometime later, the man tried to file an appeal, but soon withdrew it himself, saying that it was all useless. Finally, Lissy's father died of a heart attack shortly after his son was convicted and sent to prison. He simply could not accept the fact that he had raised a real monster, devoid of a sense of pity and remorse.